Hi, this is Darcy Lowen, The Chainsaw, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Sixth Sense Podcast. My name is Graham Nichols, and I'm joined here in the CKCU studios here at Carleton University with Graham Creech. Creech, what's up, buddy?
Not too much, buddy. What's going on?
The lockout, apparently.
Yeah. It's been about a month since our last chat.
Yeah, I think we were, in here October 8th, close to that time. So yeah, it has been a few weeks, but we are back at it. Should be a good show, too. We have Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada joining our show later on.
Outstanding.
We do have some topics of interest to hit on, too. We had the Robin Lehner versus Ben Bishop controversy, or the goaltending controversy, which apparently cannot exit our city at all. Every time of year. Doesn't matter. Lockout hockey. Doesn't matter. We're still talking about goaltending in the city. Eugene Melnyk has been in the news of late. I guess we'll hit on that later as well. And tonight, there's the first assist charity game going on in Cornwall, featuring a number of the Ottawa Senators, including Daniel Alfredson. So where would you like to go first? Binghamton?
Let's go down to Bingo, I guess.
Lack of production seems to be the recurring theme. Looking at a number of the Senators' better young prospects, guys like Mika Zibanejad, Jakob Silverberg, you can go down the list, and there has been a lack of production from those stars. Are you worried yet?
I wouldn't go with worried, but it would be nice to see them leading the AHL, among the AHL leading scorers. You got Andre Benoit and Tyler Eckford, your leading goal scorers or point getters on your team. Two defensemen.
High-scoring defensemen are in, though. Look at Justin Schultz. It's the new trend.
Well, I guess
albeit they have half as many points as Justin Schultz, but that's it.
You want to go points per game? Mark Stone's doing all right.
He has two shots on net, though.
Four games.
But yeah, good point. Small sample size. Good segue, Creech. Well done. Small sample size with the Binghamton Senators. So what? We're 9 games in to this point?
Yeah.
It's tough to get critical, especially under new coach and Luke Richardson. Players adjusting to the North American game. Is it too critical of these players at this juncture? To start questioning what's going on down in Bingo?
I'd say so. Give them some time. You heard Robin Lehner the other day saying the same thing. Give them some time. They just played two back-to-back games in Norfolk. It's a pretty tough team to...
Yeah, they won the Calder Cup last year.
Yeah, and they won, 26-game winning streak or something like that. They took one of those games. Robin Lehner looks good. Their PK looks good. Scoring will come around, especially with all the offense they have in that. Plus, you got Shane Prince, who's played, two games now?
Two games.
Mark Stone.
It seems like their key guys are generating a lot of shots, though. It's like going back to Luke Richardson's conversations on the Team 1200, he's reiterating, our team's getting shots, we're just not bearing our chances. It's a lull. It's a lull to start the year, and I think that's probably part of the concern. If this is happening maybe later in January or February, maybe it's not as much of a concern, or maybe it's getting a little bit overblown or overshadowed because maybe our attention here in Ottawa isn't on these kids right away because we're so focused on the NHL hockey that's going on here. So maybe there is that level of like micro-analysis that's going on with some of our kids because they are the highly regarded.
You're expecting
kids.
Them to light it up, and you want to hear...
Well, that's what you're hoping for, yeah. Right?
You want to hear after every weekend series that...
Mika Zibanejad had 3 hat tricks, and
Jakob Silverberg had a 7-point weekend.
Are we too demanding as fans?
No, you just want to see the organization's top prospects do well. I don't know. I'd like to read their name on the this score sheet every night, but it'll come around, I think.
Looking at the stat sheet, because I'm not streaming the games... I'm like Eugene Melnyk. I don't know if I'm going to pay for a subscription to watch these games, depending on the lockout uncertainty. I'm looking at the roster, though. You're looking at two guys who were amongst their team's leading scorers last year, Pat Kinnone and Andre Pettersson. And both of those guys are struggling to fill the net. And those are your veteran players. And you're counting on those guys to like fill the score sheet a little bit, fill the net with pucks. And to this end, You need that veteran presence, right? You need that veteran scoring to take the load off your young kids.
Well, they're not seeing as many minutes as they have last year.
And that's true. They were a very bad team. So maybe they're not as good as I'm giving them credit for.
That could be. Plus, there's a lot of different line combinations that have been tossed around there. And, well, I guess they are playing with stronger line mates now. But I don't know. I guess you'd like to see them more. I'm more concerned about seeing Zibanejad and Stone and Silverberg start lighting the lamp. And you got, I was talking about the injuries. Jared Cowan's only played a handful of games.
Yeah, he's got a hip flexor injury. That affects the team. But, like you said, the one silver light has been Robin Lehner. And today, there's an article in the Ottawa Sun from Donnie Brennan. It wasn't directly related to Bishop and versus Lehner. Well, the headline was. The rest of the article was kind of looking at training camp job battles and how Paul McClain might structure his roster training camp when the NHL lockout eventually does end. But do you think Robin Lehner has an outside chance of getting the Senators' backup job in the event that a lockout ends?
I don't know. I was planning to ask you the same question. I could see him at this point out battling Ben Bishop in training camp. And do they send him down because of his contract? It's easier to send him down and then say, we just want him to play the number one goaltender in the AHL. That's what I'd assume they say. But if the guy keeps playing this well at the AHL level and then dominating when there is a season or a start to the season, I don't know.
See, I'm loath to criticize Brennan's article because, A, I do it so often anyways.
No.
But I think there is some truth to what he says in the sense that Lehner to this point has outperformed Ben Bishop. But at the same time, the article itself today lacked context. Ben Bishop is coming off a strep throat sick illness. He had, because of the lockout, hasn't had the training camp and practice regularity that a guy like Robin Lehner has had. He also hasn't been exposed to that level of competition for the same amount of time. So I think there has to be an adjustment period there that he's not getting credit for. And looking at the two, you're right. I think Ben Bishop has the one-way contract, which will benefit him. Is there a certain point where you have to look at the Senators organization and say, all right, maybe Robin Lehner would give this team a better chance to win in the interim, but isn't he not a guy who needs to play a lot of games to get himself prepared for the next level? Like, his future in Ottawa isn't as a backup goaltender. You want that kid to play as often as possible. If it's a shortened season where Craig Anderson, a guy who hasn't played less than 50 games in the past three seasons, is taking the lion's share of the workload, when is Robin play? And would he not be better in the AHL?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say that's what we're going to be fed to when there is a training camp and he is eventually sent down. So I think that's what's going to happen.
You'd hope so, at least from that perspective.
They're not expected to win this year. They're expected to, everyone's picking them to finish around the same place, playoff bubble team. Obviously, if it's a 60-game season or even less, you're right. How many games is the backup going to see? 10, 15 games?
And I think if you're playing in 10 or 15 games, the amount of impact that you could actually have on the team is almost negligible. Is there a huge difference between Robin Lehner now and Ben Bishop? Looking at Ben Bishop's numbers last year in the AHL, he's not a bad goaltender either. So it's kind of a catch. Like, I think your ideal situation moving forward is you want Robin Lehner to be the guy, maybe not this year, but maybe as soon as next year. And I think if you had to trade a goaltender, Craig Anderson's over Ben Bishop is going to be the guy who'll get you more in return. So personally, I'd like to see Robin Lehner, a guy who has only started or played in 40% of the Binghamton games in the last two seasons. He needs to play a lot. And he needs to play consistently. To this point, we haven't seen it. He's a very streaky goaltender. And I just want to see him play as often as possible. Maybe have a little bit of success at the AHL level during the regular season with a number of the prospects who are going to eventually graduate and hopefully have success with the Senators. And I don't know if I'd be comfortable watching that guy sit on the bench just to be around the team.
I agree.
So there's that.
I agree. I think that's how it's going to pan out too.
And you're right, though. The one-way contract's huge.
Unless they move a goalie, but I don't see them moving Craig Anderson. Going with two unproven.
And if you've got to the point where you had to send Ben Bishop down, you'd essentially be moving him probably at his lowest trade value to this end, right? Because teams would know it's either you trade him for what we're offering or he has to go on waivers and go down to the minors. So it's, I don't envision a situation in which Ben Bishop is not the Senators' backup goaltender.
What's the ceiling on him? Like, I don't think.
Well, that's
now,
the other part of it too. That's a great point.
Right now, you're not gonna get more than what they paid to acquire him. Like, I think they could maximize this, which is why they probably made the trade at the time. But with him not playing and with him being the backup goaltender, there's not a lot they're gonna get from him. Maybe when Craig Anderson moves on or Robin Lehner is eventually promoted and the number one goaltender, then you can see what you can get for Ben Bishop. Who knows? Maybe he's going to be starting goaltender. You know?
What do you think his ceiling is?
I don't know. I'd say his ceiling is probably like your average starting goaltender.
So you're thinking maybe split half the games? Maybe a little bit more, 45?
1A, 1B. Maybe even a goaltender that plays, 50 games, but he's just not elite. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tough. Like, we haven't seen much of him. We've seen his numbers in St. Louis's farm system in the AHL, and then how many games last year did he get into?
But they love his makeup. They love his maturity, his athleticism for a big guy.
You can't teach big.
That's what we've been told. The biggest goaltender in the NHL, whose ceiling, ironically, isn't as high as Robin Lehner's.
That's good.
Anyways, Eugene Melnyk was in the news recently for making an appearance on Primetime Sports on the Fan 590 with Bob McCown and Damian Cox. There's talks that the NHL may be looking into fining Eugene Melnyk. Have you read his comments?
I actually watched the video that Sportsnet put up of the interview, and yeah, I listened to it.
In listening to the interview, did you think there was anything worth fining? Was there anything that you're just kind of shaking your head saying, ooh, that might have crossed the line?
Well, there was a couple points where I think everyone kind of cringed in that, but I don't know. Like, they're not supposed to talk anything. He didn't really, if you're referring to the baseball comments, I guess his defense is he was talking about another sport and that he's not a fan of that, but that's, what are they going through right now? The exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
As a fan of the club, I probably don't like them. And if I'm working for the organization, it's probably not
right.
The right comments, but I'm not sure if the NHL, have you heard anything about the league wanting, or if they're going to fine him?
I heard if it does happen, it's going to be very private and it's not going to be disclosed to the public, which is fine. I don't really care. I found the comments to be a bit more embarrassing, perhaps, than anything. And any time for that matter, I usually kind of laugh and shake my head at what the owner's saying. And it's to this end, like, he's laughing about how the 94 baseball strike turned him from a rabid fan into a non-fan who can only name Alex Rodriguez as a player. And he's laughing about it.
Couldn't name another player.
Well, couldn't name another player, but the exact same thing is going on with this stoppage right now. How many fans out there are going to stop following the sport because of it? This guy's laughing about it.
He also mentioned in the same interview.
He's proud of the fact that he can only name one baseball player now.
And later on, he kind of hinted that he wasn't too concerned about losing sponsorship or season ticket sales. So I don't know if that's something he might be in trouble for also. But I guess there's not too much to like about the interview.
You didn't like the fact that he was bragging about paying to watch the Elmira streams?
I liked that. That was funny.
And then he's like, yeah, I think they split in Hershey last weekend. It's like, Binghamton plays Hershey huge. Come on. Come
Where's
on.
Where's the nicest restaurant in Elmira? I think it's a Wendy's down the road.
Classic. Even further, there was talks on Hockey Central there were suspicions that Melnyk possibly was interested in moving the Senators as well.
Little hints of an Ontario team?
Yeah, they alluded to it and they hinted around it and laughed and shrugged. And just like the general tone and the language made it seem like they already knew that it was happening, but they wouldn't actually say it explicitly. I found that very bizarre. But McCown alluded to it before the interview, before Melnyk came on, but they never really got into it themselves. So something to pay attention to, I suppose, but
I didn't hear that. But I didn't hear any part of the show before that. So you're saying on air, Cox and McCown were talking about those
they alluded
comments,
to it briefly,
and then they didn't mention the Melnyk interview.
Not to him, no.
They must have talked about that off air and
possibly
don't mention that. But Melnyk came back and said that he's never selling this franchise, didn't he not?
Yeah, but I mean, what else is he going to say? And you know what? To in fairness to him, maybe he's not. Maybe someone's auditing the books. That's nothing out of the ord, so to speak. So
why would he want to sell Ottawa's second largest employer?
Well played.
I season.
Nice job. Nice job. Anyways, hopefully we'll be able to talk to Elliot Friedman a little bit later in the show about Eugene Melnyk. Get some comments there. See if he's heard any rumblings. Moving on. Daniel Alfredson is appearing in a charity game tonight for the First Assist charity. And it's also, I believe, money is being split with the Max Keeping Fund.
Yeah, there's lots of local products. Jesse Winchester.
Very local.
Well, you know, he's not
the unemployable Jesse Winchester.
That's what I was getting at. I'd like to see him find a home somewhere. A couple of other players too, that like the Giantas. I'd like to know how they tie into it.
I don't know if they're from like upstate New York. They might be from upstate New York. Come across the bridge. They're in Montreal.
Yeah.
Well, Stevens is he in New Jersey still, or did he sign as a free agent somewhere else?
Not sure.
Yeah. Steven Gianta. Yeah. Who cares? Grant Klitsam's another player.
Local boy.
Sean Donovan.
Dono.
Neil. Peter Regan. Hopefully his shoulder doesn't get dinged. Who else is playing? Carl Dykhouse.
Yeah, we're talking about that off air.
A name from lore. Yeah, Carl Dykhouse.
Should look him up in HockeyDB in a minute and see when the last time he played any kind of hockey was.
There haven't been any goaltenders announced for the matchup, though.
Ah, that's a good point. I'm sure if we check Twitter, we can find out.
Maybe Freddie Brathwaite will make an appearance.
Freddie Brathwaite. There's been three goalies skating with the Ottawa boys, right? So Brathwaite's one of them.
I don't know if Anderson's in town.
I don't know where he's at right now. Haven't heard. That's weird. Haven't heard much from him.
Another one of the Senators players who doesn't take advantage of Twitter very often. I was joking earlier. Robin Lehner should teach a course on how to use Twitter to the players. The fact that the Sens TV hasn't taken advantage of Robin Lehner to this point.
The Lehner.
Oh, sketch comedy. You could do so much with that guy.
Unreal. Little winky face tweets after wins and fights.
Lesson number one. I think someone tweeted that to us. Lesson number one. End every tweet with a happy face or a wink. He's
like
a beaut.
The Batman spotlight.
Yeah.
What a guy. A media, any kind of member of the media's dream right there.
So here's a question for you. Obviously, we're not going to be there tonight because we're recording in studios here. Had it not been tonight, is that something that you would have actually paid $20 to go see? I believe that's the cost of the ticket tonight.
If I had no other plans, I guess. You got to drive to Cornwall. Or if I was covering it, I'd go.
If I got paid to go, I would go.
Let's just put it this way. They've been practicing at the Sensplex. I haven't gotten to see.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll be nice to get them in an environment where they can actually pan to the crowd and just play in an environment that isn't the Bell Sensplex.
It'll be fun for people living in Cornwall, for sure, who don't normally get that kind of thing, or have to drive to Ottawa to see it. It'd be fun to see the boys joke around and give them a reason to raise money for good causes, but I don't think I'd make the trek to Cornwall just to go see that.
It'd be fun to leave Cornwall, too. You found a tweet, though, from Daniel Alfredson.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of alluding to when I was talking about the Twitter comments, but Ian Mendes tweeted about 45 minutes ago that he just asked Daniel Alfredson if he's more optimistic that a new CBA deal will get done, and he says, no, not really.
Now, do you think we've seen a lot of bannering between the PA and the NHL through the media? It's just kind of like volleying back and forth, firing shots. It seems like that's kind of subsided a little bit. Do you think they're trying to play down what's actually happening behind closed doors? Because it's been quiet for the past few days, and it seems like they're negotiating well, and it's so it seems like the ball's finally moving, and
it is a positive vibe right now.
Maybe it's a little bit more optimistic than it has been over the past few weeks, especially after the cancellation of the World Winter Classic.
When
so
they talked into Sunday morning, mm-hmm, on Saturday, and they agreed with each other's statements that were posted. So that's a good sign. But yeah, getting at if Alfie is just kind of downplaying it, so there's no letdowns again this week.
No PR spin. It's just let's just get this done and not worry about it.
I'd say so. He's a pretty honest guy, I think, for most of his interviews that you read and hear. So I'd say that's probably what it is. Although, you hear Mark Mathot was on Team 1200 today, and he seemed more positive.
So here's a question for you then. How much do you blame the media for some of the spin and the micro-analysis that goes on with each released public comment? Because you're seeing that a lot. You're getting a lot of that analysis.
There's nothing
to cover.
Session.
Yeah, it's just, it's true.
That's what we're doing right now. Like, they got to report something, and then obviously people are leaking this. Mm-hmm. If this meeting was so private on the weekend, why did we know that it was happening, and why did we know when it was finishing and it was still going on? I don't know. They're leaking stuff that they want to get leaked, but I guess I could see if from a player's standpoint, especially a lot of the media seems to be kind of leaning towards taking the owner's side, and I guess I get frustrated if I was a member of the PA as well, but I don't know. There's Twitter. Like, there's not everything's out there. What are you going to do?
Social media world that we live in. It'll be interesting to talk to Elliot Friedman coming up in the next few minutes, because I'd love to get his take on what Daniel Alfredson had to say. I'd love to see what his vibe of what is going on behind NHL closed doors. So when we get back, Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada will be joining us. Stay tuned.
There's a surgical light and a shaky hand. Two takes awake, she's off with the evening's man. And I'm waiting for...
All right, listeners, we're in for a treat. Joining us right now is the writer of the best recurring hockey feature on the internet, Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Not bad, Graham One, I guess. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. So, Elliot, before we get going, Daniel Alfredson was talking to Ian Mendez tonight at a local charity hockey game here in Ottawa, and he kind of sounded less than optimistic that there was going to be improving dialogue between the NHLPA and NHL. Is there any reason for optimism right now?
Well, I think there's reason for optimism because they are talking. There's no question about that. I think that's the number one thing. You know, the thing that's been missing from this entire process is there's never been a long negotiation. You know, every time they've met, it's been short, or the owners have walked out after 10 minutes or anything like that. And, you know, I think that, you know, there's no way the season is going to get canceled until they at least make an effort at it. And this is the start of that effort. So I think that there's a long way to go. And the other thing, too, guys, is I really do believe that there's no point in getting everybody's hopes up until we're really far along the way. Because all we've been throughout this entire process has been disappointed. So why, it's like an old Rudy Giuliani rule, why you come in with the undersell, and that way people are excited as opposed to disappointed. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's some of that going on here.
Now, I've heard like certain members of the media and even some fans in general believe that the potential start date or the number of games that were going to be missed was like pre-orchestrated. Do you believe this? And if so, or if not, what would either side gain from this?
Well, I think that one of the things you have to realize, and this is obviously Graham too, is that there is a law firm that has been representing all of the leagues recently through this stuff. And it's a law firm that's based in the New York City called Proskauer Rose. And Gary Bettman used to work there. David Stern used to work there. It worked for the National Football League last year when it went through its lockout. It worked for the NBA last year when it went through its lockout. And it worked for the NHL in 2004 and 2005 when we all lost a season. And there are people who believe that that law firm scripts these kinds of situations. And they say, this is what you're going to do here, and this is what you're going to do there, and this is how you're going to react to this, and this is how you're going to react to that. So there are people who believe that everything that's happened so far from an owner's perspective has been drawn up by this firm. And, you know, I think that this entire situation has been badly handled by both sides. I think that it's been astonishing to me how little negotiation has gone on. But the people who believe that are optimistic and believe there will be hockey say that it's because this is how this thing was going to be handled from the start, and this is why, because that's the way this law firm operates. We'll find out if they're right.
Well, it certainly makes sense considering you see an event like the Winter Classic get canceled, and then shortly thereafter you're seeing that the NHL might make some concessions related to the make-whole provision.
Yeah. I mean,
It sure makes you wonder, doesn't it? Like, but we have to see what that is and what that means. The players haven't seen anything yet on paper, and until they do, I think that I think that any saying that their make whole is going to be amenable to them is premature.
Just switching gears a little bit here. Hockey Night of Canada's contract expires after the 2013-14 season. Have you guys had any internal dialogue, kind of seeing this second last season and your deal kind of wither away? Is that tough to see?
Well, I think it's tough to see because of what it means for jobs. I mean, you know, the CBC is in a process right now where we're going to be laying off 650 people over 3 years, even before hockey came in. And those are people with families, and those are people with hopes and dreams, and I hate to see that happen. I've lost my job before. I know what that's like. It happened to me when I was younger, and it is a humiliating thing. So even before we're dealing with this, the hockey lockout, we're dealing with that. And the CBC in this process, at least our sports department, has not laid anybody off in addition to what was initially planned. But I think we all understand that if the season does get canceled, there are going to be layoffs in sports. And I think that, to me, is the difficult thing. It's not necessarily about the contract. It's about the immediacy and the fact that people's lives are going to be affected by it.
Now, just to follow up on that question, do you think that the expiration of the Hockey Night in Canada program is going to be something that the NHL is going to use to boost its revenues down the road?
Well, I think absolutely. I think, you know, now, if there is a season played this year, I think that we get another year. I'm not 100% positive on that, but if they cancel the year, I think it's 2 years until the Hockey Night in Canada again would lose its two seasons. I think we're still owed two seasons. So if one isn't played this year, it moves back.
That's interesting.
Now, the whole thing about that is, if you look at the way the NFL is done, there's two very different TV contracts you can look at. You look at the NFL and Major League Baseball, both those leagues have been very successful financially by making sure everybody has a piece of it. You look at the NFL, you can watch games on NBC, CBS, Fox, ESPN, and the NFL Network. Five different networks have games, okay? And Major League Baseball, they just signed $12 billion worth of deals to go over, I think, to like 2021 or something like that, that puts their games on Fox, Turner Broadcasting, and ESPN, in addition to all their local rights holders. So they spread it out, and they made a fortune. Now, I think the NHL is going to want to copy that. They are going to want to have hockey as many places as they can, because and this is the big reason, it's the best way to make more money. And also, hockey is such a good property right now in Canada that if you don't have it, you're really in trouble, and especially if you want to base your network on sports. So I think what you're going to see is the NHL say, look, in a lot of these networks in the States who have football and baseball, it's a loss leader. They don't make a ton of money on it, if anything, but they got to have it. And, you know, I think you could see a situation where they try that in Canada and see how much money they can get, because you know, you guys are fans. Can you imagine CBC without Hockey Night, or TSN without hockey, or Sportsnet without some kind of hockey? No, we all need it. And I think the NHL, if they were smart, and I think they are, will try to exploit it.
Do you believe that once all this CBA stuff gets settled, there's going to be expansion?
I think eventually there will be. I don't know how quickly. I mean, obviously the first question is what's going to happen in Phoenix. And if they don't get that sorted out, where are the Coyotes going to go? To me, I believe the NHL wants to put them in Seattle or move them to Seattle because it keeps the team on the West Coast. You know, I think it's you know, the one thing, though, guys, and I don't know how closely you follow it, But the NHL and arena in Toronto is in the new one, the one in Markham, is in big trouble. Yep. Without the promise of an NHL team, there was another story released today that they now have a maximum, or they now have a majority of the local city councilors against that deal. So that's a big problem. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how that turns out, but I do believe the NHL wants to expand.
That's interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if they went to Seattle. I feel like that's a great market. You look at terms of their soccer support in the MLS and their baseball support and their support for football and the collegiate programs there. It's unbelievable.
I agree with you. I think that they've done a lot of research into Seattle. I know that I've spoken to some people inside the league who've seen those reports, and they really do believe in Seattle as a market. I do tell you, I kind of wonder, I mean, is it a four-sport market? Because they already have the NFL, they already have Major League Baseball, and they're going to get the NBA back. David Stern has always said his biggest mistake was, or one of his biggest regrets were Vancouver and Seattle. Well, I'm not so sure they're going to put a team back in Vancouver, but I'm pretty sure they're going to do it in Seattle before he gets back. And the owner of that building wants the NBA first and foremost. I think the only question people have about that market is it a four-sport town?
Elliot, sticking with the West Coast, I know earlier in the offseason you mentioned that Shea Weber getting offer sheeted was a big highlight, and you speculated that that would lead to a number of the other leagues more highly paid and well-respected players getting, I suppose, in a rush to get deals of their own. I think you mentioned Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaf as examples of that. Are you somewhat surprised that guys like Perry and Getzlaf didn't sign deals?
Well, I was a little bit, but then somebody told me that the Anaheim owner is kind of a hardliner in all of this, and that actually made a lot more sense. Anaheim is a situation that's had some real money issues. They've lost a lot of money, and you know they've been hoping to get an NBA team there. I don't know what their chances are. They don't look as good as they did about a year ago, and I think he's a guy who's looking at it like, I'd better get real revenue sharing, or I'm not going to support a deal, or something that can alleviate my problem, or I'm not going to support a deal. And, I think that that's part of the reason it didn't get done. You know, if you're Corey Perry or you're Ryan Getzlaf, you look at those deals that Weber got, or you look at some of the deals that guys like Mike Richards and Jeff Carter have got, and you say, why not me? Why shouldn't I get that? We're franchise players. And Perry, of course, was the MVP 2 years ago. So I think they looked at it, and I just think Anaheim wasn't as willing to go that route and wanted to see what the new CBA would look like. I think another player in sort of a smaller situation who went through that, or two other guys, were Jamie Benn and PK Subban. I think those were guys who wanted more long-term contracts, but their team said, no, we'll see what the new CBA looks like. It's going to be interesting because, if those two guys were to hit the market, they'd have a ton of interest. Now, I'm curious to see. One thing that was explained to me was that there were some people who wanted to look and see if there is a rollback or players take a haircut on the escrow, will contracts signed after the new CB is done actually be more valuable? And I think some people wondered that. But I think in Anaheim's case, it came down primarily to the fact that the owner is a bit of a hardliner, doesn't like the previous CBA, and wants to see where the new one will take him.
And coming full circle from a Senator's perspective, I know looking back at this offseason, Ottawa expressed some interest in acquiring Rick Nash, and I think a lot of fans have been looking at Ottawa's payroll and bottom line over the past two seasons and thinking, okay, now here's a team that's now spending at the bottom of the league in terms of their payroll allocation, and they've shown interest in a guy like Rick Nash. Now, Corey Perry is a guy who has a history with Brian Murray, and he becomes a UFA next summer. Do you see that as a potential fit for Ottawa?
If the rules stay the same.
If the rules stay the same, exactly.
No, I don't think that would be a problem at all. And, you know, ultimately, I think the biggest question the Senators are going to have moving forward is, how are they going to replace Daniel Alfredsson when the time comes? You look up and down the roster, you've got Anderson for a while, you've got a couple of young goalies who look like they have promise. Suddenly you're looking at your defense with Erik Karlsson, who's a Norris Trophy winner, and a guy like Jared Cowan, who looks like he could play on the blue line for a long time. You know, Chris Phillips obviously is signed for a few more years. You look up and down your forward lines. You've got Spezza there for a while. You've got Turris there for a while. You've got a lot of young guys. But when Daniel Alfredsson leaves and retires, there's going to be an enormous hole there. And it's going to be on the ice because he's still a productive player. And it's going to be in the room because he's been the backbone of the organization for such a long time. And you're going to need to make a splash like that. You're going to need to go out and get a guy who can play first line minutes and be a factor in terms of leadership. And Corey Perry is a lot like that kind of guy. The only problem with Corey Perry is that everybody's going to want him. Like, there, if when he hits the market, there's going to be 29 teams calling him and saying, hey, you know, what do you want? So I think ultimately it's going to come down to what he wants, because he's going to have a lot of different options.
Just kind of sticking with the Senators, last week on Hockey Central, the guys kind of hinted that the Senators might be up for sale, or that somebody was looking over the books. Have you heard anything, or do you think that Eugene Melnyk might be possibly putting the club up for sale?
There have been rumors about that for a long time. You know, like, I have heard rumors about Eugene Melnyk needing to sell the Senators for a couple years now. And some of it has always been, it's not necessarily by choice, it's just by, I mean, as you guys know, if you followed Melnyk's history in the markets, there's always seems to be some questions as to how well he's actually doing. So you hear that from time to time. Oh, Eugene Melnyk, some trouble, BioVail, he's going to need to sell. You know, it's happened so many times. Either I kind of sit there now, it's almost like the boy who cried wolf. Okay, is it going to happen already? Give me some reason to believe it's going to happen. So until I actually get somebody out to say, who says, all right, Eugene Melnyk is putting his team on the market, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I've heard these rumors for so long. I don't believe them until I get any proof, I guess, is the best way to answer it.
He came out quickly, shortly thereafter, and he said, nope, never going to sell this team. You've dealt with Melnyk on a number of levels. We see him appear and make his, you know, funny sayings wherever he goes, and we've seen him make, like overblown
sayings.
2 years
ago when he said, we're going right to the Stanley Cup. Just
buckle up, we're going all the way, yeah. You've dealt with him on a number of occasions. What's your assessment of his personality and the way he kind of comes off? Because as fans, like Creech and I were going over his comments that he made on the Fan 590 with McCowan in regards to the CBA and the lockout, and we're just, as fans, we're kind of embarrassed for what's going on. What's your assessment as a broadcaster who has some experience interviewing him?
Well, you know, it's funny. Like, last week I wrote in the blog that there were a bunch of really hardline teams, and people were telling me that Ottawa was one. Like, one of the hardliner of the hardliners in the NHL. And I couldn't get any real proof of it. And then when he gave that interview, it certainly seemed different. So I don't know exactly what's going on there, because one thing I can tell you is he's a very emotional guy. That's the word on Eugene Melnyk. He is very emotional about the Senators. He's very passionate about them, but he is very emotional about them. And I think that, you know, he's the kind of guy who maybe sometimes needs to be said, you know, Eugene, that's not a good idea. Don't do that. And I think that's what it is. And, you know, at times, like I'll tell you one situation a few years ago, we were doing a playoff game, and Ottawa was losing. And I was kind of wondering what exactly is going on here, because Melnyk was around the dressing room in the second intermission. I said, that's unusual. And I didn't realize it till later. But, you know, he wanted to go in and pump up the team, and he was talked out of it. This is not the time for that. And, you know, I think it's not easy, because when your owner wants to do that kind of thing, there aren't a lot of people who will say no, but the Senators did. And I think that he's an emotional guy. He's heavily invested in the team. You know, he reminds me of a lot of your fans. He's a fan like you are, except he's a fan who happens to have a lot of money in the ownership of the club. And I think sometimes that gets in the way, because when you're an owner, you can't always be that emotional you probably have to be the most rational guy of everybody in the organization.
And that's how I took some of his comments that he made the other day on Primetime Sports, just that he came off as just a fan. Now, recently, Paul McLean said that he thinks the lockout's hurting the Senators' momentum that they had built, making the playoffs and taking the Rangers to 7 games. Do you believe in that theory, or that it's helping any specific clubs, such as the Kings, just with extra rest?
Yeah, I believe the Kings won, absolutely. I think any of those teams that played a lot last year, for sure. I think that it helps probably teams that are veteran-laden. It probably helps Alfredson a bit. It probably helps you guys. But I think at the end of the day, Paul McLean wants to be on the ice coaching his team, and he's probably, I bet you there's 30 coaches who would say, or maybe not 30, but 25 who would say, this lockout is really hurting us. I think that, one of the things that it's going to be really interesting is, I don't know how much this affects you guys right now, but if you have a really good young player, say like a Ryan Murray in Columbus or a Galchenyuk in Montreal, where you're going to say, how are we going to see if this guy's ready to play in the NHL right now? Do we take him out of his junior team and bring him to a week of training camp where he might not have an exhibition game and then try him, or do we leave him there? I think that those are the teams that face the most difficult decisions. At least in a lot of ways, you guys can look at your roster and say it's set. I think you're probably ahead of the game in a lot like that. The only other question I have for Ottawa is, how many of your guys are playing right now?
I think they had 14. I think they were one of the highest teams, actually.
Well,
in the
you
league
want
in terms
that.
Of participation.
You know, if you were a team that didn't have a lot of guys playing, I think I'd be a lot more concerned. And I'll tell you this, the biggest question is going to be how many games they decide to play if they do go, because if you get an injury and those schedules could really be jammed, you're going to a big injury could ruin your season.
Now, Elliot, I know you've written in the past about the advancements of sabermetrics and advanced statistics in hockey. We're starting to see the emergence of websites like Behind the Net, who I've seen you write about before. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see them come on a television more. Even in baseball, we're seeing the use of like on-base percentage and OPS during broadcasts more often. How long before you see that actually coming into hockey more often? And what's it going to take to cater to a general audience or a casual audience who may not be as familiar about this?
Well, I think the biggest question, guys, is how understandable are they? And because I think sometimes, okay, my father is a chief financial officer of a company. The math gene skipped a generation in my family, okay? I was never great at it. I like it, but I was never great at it. And sometimes I really think that, it's not easily explainable. Even things like zone starts, which I think is a pretty easy thing to understand, it's not always explained very well. So I think that's the number one thing. How can you explain it so the average human being can understand it? Number two, I think in hockey it is much tougher than in baseball. I mean, baseball is such a thing that's linear. This happens, then this happens, then that happens. It's so much more easily translatable there. Even like a sport like basketball is so much more easily translatable than in hockey. And you know what? I'll tell you this. I think sometimes the biggest problems that the people who are statistically inclined have is the rudeness of their positions. Sometimes some of us in the mainstream media can be a little bit off-putting towards people who are new with these ideas, but it goes both ways. And I can't tell you how many times I used to receive things in my mailboxes like, you're an idiot and you don't know anything because you refuse to consider advanced stats. And I really hate that, and I think that attitude interferes as much with the growth of them as anything else does. I think there's a lot of value in these kinds of things. I've learned a lot, but I think sometimes the arrogance, and I will say on both sides, hurts it. But when you're new and you're trying to create awareness in something new, you almost have to be the one who's willing to say, all right, let me explain this in a way that makes a lot of sense. And I think the last thing is, the last thing that really drives me crazy about the advanced dance revolution is the way it removes the things called, like, heart and clutch, okay? People can't quantify that, so they make fun of it. They say it doesn't exist. They poo-poo it. They say it's a stupid thing that that can't be quantified, so it doesn't really matter. It does matter. You know, I've learned a lot about, you know, the kind of player who, especially in hockey, when the game, like, I mean, hockey is a game where now, if you want to put a score in it, where are all the goals scored? They're scored close to the net. If you want to get close to the net, you're going to have to pay the punishment of doing it. The person who can do that cannot be easily quantified. It can only be seen by experience. And I think if to really make advanced stats relevant in hockey, you're going to almost have to be willing to say there are things we probably can't measure unless you're going to count every time a guy goes to the front of the net and takes a whack while scoring a goal. And I think when there's an understanding that it has to be a blend, just like it has to be a blend in every other sport, I think that the marriage will be complete.
And that's a great way to put it. It's just one piece of a puzzle. It's just,
yeah, that's what I believe.
That's awesome. Elliot, last question for you. We know that Mike Gillis is a huge proponent of statistics. I think Calgary is starting to implement them as well.
San Jose, big.
Yeah, and then Buffalo, obviously, because of the connection there. Do you know if Ottawa has dabbled at all?
You know what? Off the top of my head, I don't. But I think the one thing I've learned, and there's a story I'm working on, I don't want to share it here because I'm working on it. I'm trying to, trying to get it. But I think that there is more going on than we know about. Now, I'm not specifically saying that's happening in Ottawa, but it wouldn't surprise me if there are teams out there who are doing things that we don't know about. And I think they want to keep it that way. Like, you know, like a team like Detroit, I always wonder what Detroit's up to, because Ken Holland and Mike Babcock I'll ask coaches and general managers, what books have you read so I can have a better understanding of what the way they think? And both of them suggested two different books about the Patriots. Mike Babcock read Bill Belichick's book by David Halberstam, and Ken Holland gave another book that was written about their title reign. And in it, the Patriots talk a lot about secrecy and not letting other people know what you're up to, and sometimes not even listing people in your organization in your media guides or on your online websites. And if a team like Detroit is reading that, I wouldn't be surprised if they're doing things that we don't know about. And if they're reading those books, hey, everybody wants to follow the Patriots, and they're looking at them and saying, we'll do that too. So I think there's a whole lot of stuff that's being done out there that we don't know about. And I'm not saying Ottawa's involved or not, but I'm saying it wouldn't surprise me. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of it, though.
Hopefully this culminates in like a Michael Lewis expose that we can attribe to you.
there was one team that hired a guy, and they haven't denied it, but they're not exactly helping me with it either. I'm trying to get that story.
Awesome. Elliot, thank you very much for coming on the show. We appreciated having you and talking to us. But we'll plug your Movember movement as well. We'll plug that page on the website when it goes up.
But happy to do it.
Thank you very much for coming on.
All right, guys. Have a great night.
Take care. Was that 30 minutes with Elliot Friedman? Because I wish it went an hour. That was absolutely fantastic.
Outstanding. All because of a Movember mustache growing competition and awareness for charity.
Yeah. So donate. Donate to Movember. Especially Elliot Friedman's. Tell him we sent you.
He's sitting pretty. I think he's up at like $600 or something like that.
Is he?
He doesn't even have any facial growth, doesn't look like his pitcher.
Yeah, no, he's a good guy. He's a really good guy. Didn't have to come on, but he did. Especially this time of year, because obviously with everything that's going on in the past 72 hours, he's probably a very, very busy man. So we appreciate him coming on. But you kind of wanted to hit on the advanced stats thing, because you share the opinion. Like, you're not, you would never label yourself as a huge sabermetric guy. Like,
no.
you've seen the numbers, you're of the same opinion. Like, he explained it well for you. You're just like, well, I look at the numbers and...
Yeah, I don't downplay them, but I just, maybe I don't understand them as well, but I look at other things that guys bring to the table, and like what he was saying, like heart and clutch performances and...
Going to the high traffic areas that
yeah,
you don't necessarily
hockey
see.
IQ, just stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
That's what I see, that's what I notice when I watch games, and I don't know, maybe if they could get all the guys that are writing and coming up with these new stats to clearly define them and put like categorize them, I guess, so that they're easily presented to people that don't understand them.
I find they're so poorly named. Getting into it, you look at these weird rates, and they're named after people who help other people come up with the idea, and it's not well described. Like, you look at baseball, for example, you're like, on base percentage.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty self-explanatory.
Exactly.
And you look at hockey and it's not like that whatsoever. So I think that's a huge issue that we didn't really address in the Friedman interview. But when I look at those numbers, I'm kind of trying to reaffirm what I'm seeing on the ice. Like, you look at a guy like Eric Condra, I know he catches flack in some hockey circles in Ottawa because he doesn't have that finishing touch. You joke about him missing that net in Boston where he had the wide open cage and he fires it off the post and you're just like, come on. But I look at that guy and I notice his hockey IQ is off the charts. It's like that Chris Kelly kind of, you can see it. He's got that hockey acumen, and he controls the puck well. Maybe he doesn't get all the crazy scoring chances that some of the more highly offensive players get, but you can tell, like, he has the puck, and he plays with the puck, and he retains possession of it.
He's responsible. He's smart.
And I look at the numbers, and they reaffirm that. And that's kind of how I look at it. I agree with everything that you and Friedman are saying in the sense that you can't treat it like it's the only part of the picture. But at least it's some of it, and it helps explain some of the stuff that maybe a casual fan might not pick up on.
You're bang on, too, with, like, the names for them. Because, yeah, exactly, on-base percentage. I don't know too much about all these stats. But when I see that in baseball, like, I understand. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they broke that down, maybe the casual fan, even myself included, like, I read your articles that you guys post all the time, and it's... You got to sit there and concentrate about what's being described to you because you don't understand.
And some people just look at those articles and they'll just tune out immediately because they just want nothing to do with it. It's either because they don't want to understand or they just don't care. And that's fair. Like, they're hockey fans.
Yeah,
like that.
I don't not care. Like, I'll read those. I just don't understand them that well.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get that into my game a little bit, but I notice what it takes to be out there. Like, that's what I like to find in players. But
mm-hmm.
Exactly, just join them all together.
In some respects, it even helps explain the situations that players get put in. Like, you look at a defensive player like Chris Phillips, he starts shifts in his own zone a lot because he's the defensive defenseman who's relied upon to get the puck out. And I'd like to see hockey eventually get to a stage where you know, like, you listen to guys talk about Wade Redden in his first pass, like all those years that he played in Ottawa. You'd love to be able, at some point down the road, to be able to evaluate how good was Wade Redden at moving the puck. Like, how good were his first passes? How many advanced the play up the ice? And I don't know if we're there yet. I know some people are taking massive, massive amounts of time to track that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, it would be tough to measure that. Like, but that is outstanding.
Yeah.
Because
that's
guys,
the way I'm kind of hoping that the game goes.
As someone who understands the game, you understand who can move the puck well and
who's clunking it off the glass to get it out to relieve pressure.
You know what? Kind of changing subjects, but what that made me think of was Gary Ock's article on with Dorion on scouting mm-hmm. and just what the scouting report they had in 2008 of Erik Karlsson. Like, that was outstanding.
Yep.
And it's bang on. Like, he mm-hmm. creates the offense. Once he gets the puck, he gets going.
He's like a point guard in the NBA.
It's unreal.
The way he just carries the puck up.
How do you measure that?
Yeah.
I can tell you that he's good at doing that, but
yeah.
I don't have any stats for you.
And can he do it at a higher level, too? It's projecting that, you know, he's doing it at a younger age against smaller players, but can he carry that to the next level? And that's tough. That's difficult to do. So, obviously, scouts had it right. Do the Senators use projections like that? Who knows? But it's certainly interesting. I think heading down the road, it's only going to get more and more clear, hopefully, and
well, I'd imagine,
hopefully it's something
right?
that gets embraced a little bit more.
It's relatively new. Like, I don't know how long.
Oh, I've only been doing it. I think I've only been looking in the past 2 years, maybe.
Yeah.
2.5 years, maybe. I started reading these articles, thinking, oh, well, I'm a baseball guy as well, so that's interesting. Let's see it. And over the past few years, I've loved guys like Peter Regan. I've appreciated the work that guys like Condor do, and those are the high puck possession guys. And kind of me just watching how these guys play, I've appreciated what they do, and they're not as highly regarded or as widely accepted as some of the other star players on the team. But
well,
those are the
stars.
Guys who I kind of pay attention to. And you
exactly.
know, I don't know.
They bring other things to the table. Subtleties. They're not going to score 40 goals. They're not natural goal scorers. They don't have the finish. You can tell.
Right.
They're also not hardcore grinders, but they're just smart hockey players, and they do the other things that need to get done, like Friedman was referring to, taking hits in front of the net, and getting pucks out of the zone, taking a hit to clear a puck.
Yep. Anyways, great show. Is there anything else that you want to hit on?
Not really. I
You're
think
consent?
We if there was more hockey, there'd be more to hit on. I think
it's
pretty good.
It's true. You want to wrap up then?
I think you got it, man.
You can take it home if you want.
Last thing I just want to say, Friedman was outstanding. If you aren't, for whatever reason, not reading his 30 thoughts, get into that because it's my favorite hockey read every week.
Absolutely. Like, I look forward to it.
Unreal.
Yep. All right, man. It's been good. Listeners, thanks for checking us out. Ellie Friedman, thank you once again. That was absolutely fantastic. We'd love to have you back on at some point. And donate. Donate to Elliot Friedman. It's a Movember cause.
Are you creating a mole?
Yeah, I got the beard kind of thing going on.
You got the
on.
Beard going right now.
I and think. you have the mo going as well.
I'm doing the mo. It's 4 years in a row.
I'm thinking of it.
Do it up.
The girlfriend's giving me the thumbs up. Go Ooh, for it if I want to.
There you go.
So, got the green light of approval there. So maybe I will. I haven't decided yet.
Next time we'll be recording, we'll be giving rug burn to these microphones.
All right. I guess that's a wrap. Good way to end it. But listeners, thanks again. Love coming back in here. And hopefully next time we get together, there'll be a little bit more good news to talk about. So thank you for checking us out. We'll be back.